And hello and welcome to Hollywood Blockbusters. I am Joe Hollywood. And once again, I'm joined by Imaginos Pete.
Hey, hey.
And Andrew Walker. And Robert Butler. Thanks for coming back. Welcome back to the podcast studio.
We have Robert back.
Thank you for being back, brother.
We need your expertise.
Yes, my pleasure.
Because without you, we're just dumb guys. All right, so this is our, what is it, 96th Oscar recap?
Mm-hmm. It's got to be.
Just a few years away from the 100th Oscar ceremony. We're going to look back at the Oscars from this past Sunday. We all agree that it was probably the most entertaining broadcast in a long, long time.
Yes.
Might have to go back to the Billy Crystal days to find an Oscar broadcast that was as entertaining as this. So what we're going to do today, we're going to kind of look at best and worst moments. We're going to go over some of the awards. We don't necessarily have to cover all of the awards. And then just kind of share our pet peeves and gripes and complaints and compliments toward the end there. So the first thing I want to talk about is the monologue, the open monologue. I thought Jimmy's monologue was a little weak this year. I thought he kind of took a page from the Ricky Gervais Golden Globes way of hosting a show. I thought he took an unnecessary jab at Robert Downey Jr., bringing up his past drug habit. And when they cut to RDJ, he was doing the let's move it along thing, and Kimmel was kind of dwelling on it, and
yeah,
I'm doing the same thing. Like, come on, let's move on. This was such a big night for RDJ, and it's like let's not dwell on his
in the
past
opening
mistakes.
Monologue. That's where I'm like, you know, I don't mind making fun of, but don't take the personal jabs in there
because
it's been done. We all know it's not like Robert Downey did this just last week.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's a great success story. And I don't see anything wrong with acknowledging his progression that he's made. But don't dwell on it. Let him have his moment. Let him have his fun. Now, when he got up later to accept his award, he kind of made some fun of himself, which he is allowed to do. You can be self-deprecating up there. But I thought Kimmel sort of went the Ricky Gervais route. This isn't necessarily a roast. You know, I mean, yeah, you're taking jabs at Hollywood, and maybe it's deserved. But come on, let's keep it light and friendly. There's another comedy made about Gerard Depardieu that I thought was in poor taste. So right off the bat, I thought the monologue was kind of hit and miss. Did you guys, anything about the opening monologue jump out at you?
Yeah, the Gerard Depardieu, that felt a little like Dennis Miller. Like, yeah, I like the quote about Charlemagne. And like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, where is this coming from?
It's like the sword of Damocles hanging over my head. It's like, no one's going to get that reference.
Like, why aren't we taking a shot at Gerard?
I know. I mean,
come on.
He's sitting there watching going, what did I do?
No, I mean, I thought Kimmel's opening, you know, when it led off with some of the very early on before he got his feet wet, he started taking some of the personal jabs in there. I went, okay, let's not have that type of Oscars right now. I enjoy making fun of the audience. Like, it's good to poke fun of, but there's that line that you kind of have, like all the, like Billy Crystal knew how to walk that line.
Yeah.
And some of the great hosts in the past, Steve Martin, you had to walk that line.
Yeah.
So you make fun of, but you don't cross that line, especially not in the Oscars, not right away. But he had some great moments, like later on in the show. There were some funny bits.
We'll get to some of the opening monologue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was a little disappointed because I don't know if you guys saw, there was a very elaborate teaser that was produced prior to the Oscars where it involved Barbie and Ryan Gosling, and Jimmy was in there, and Kate McKinnon. And I'm like, this is amazing. Is this a taste of what we're going to get?
That used to be Crystal.
And then they did just a few seconds of that, and then they went right into the monologue. And I'm like, oh, I wanted more of that.
I remember the one with Jon Stewart where they kept going through all the hosts, and then they would go through movie phone is not interested, and then they finally landed on Jon Stewart. They went through everybody. Like, Whoopi Goldberg opens the door, oh hell no. And then she closed the door, so they finally landed on Jon Stewart. And he goes, well, I guess it's me.
Now, early on, Kimmel said, we're running 5 minutes behind. And then he said, seriously, we are running 5 minutes behind. And I just learned today that apparently there were protests outside the Kodak Theater, the Dolby Theater, and people were protesting, you know, the ceasefire in Palestine or Hamas or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I guess that delayed entry to the facility. So that kind of is why we're sitting there on the couch going, how come we're not in the auditorium yet? Okay. So politics got in the way of a on-time start. So we get into the monologue. Like I said, it was hit and miss. One thing I did think that was kind of cool is the fact that, you know, Detroit is a union town. And toward the end of the monologue, yeah. Jimmy went pro-union.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And
yep.
showed support for the writers and the actors and the little people that make movies. And I thought that was a pretty great moment.
And it almost got drowned out in the applause, but the IATSE, IATSE union members were also, he gave a shout out to them because he says when they go on strike, we'll back them up. But
yeah,
kudos to him.
That opening monologue, my issue with it is it went too long. It was like 35 minutes till we got to the first award.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, they can tighten that up a little bit.
I felt like it was just a big Barbenheimer opening, too. They didn't really focus on many other of the movies. They did focus on Killers of the Flower Moon, but they were really picking on that movie a lot, and the jokes just fell flat. It's like, oh, we know it's a long movie. Going to the Oklahoma just was not a funny joke by Kimmel.
One thing that was interesting when Kimmel kind of threw this in the face of the people that were there, he was talking about Greta Gerwig's snub for director, and people sort of applauded. And he said, "You're the voters.
Yeah,
you
right.
did
yeah,
this.
You're the reason why she didn't get a nomination."
He called
him out. That was clever.
I thought that was funny.
I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Good on you, Kimmel. Good on you.
So, don't applaud if you didn't vote for him. So then after the monologue, they get into the awards. And one thing that a lot of people agreed on that was very tasteful and well done is how they brought out the past winners to address each nominee. And imagine you're a first-time nominee, you know, and this is a big deal. And now one of your heroes, one of Hollywood royalty, is looking you in the eye and saying, this is what your performance meant. And I thought that was a very classy and elegant
sort
move.
Of a passing of the torch sort of thing. That it was nice.
I liked it, but there was a part of me that says, I wish they maybe told the others in advance that they rehearsed a little bit. So you know who your buddy is.
Yeah,
so they can talk to you. Because for some of them, like when it came to Forrest Whitaker with Colman Domingo, it looked like he was reading it, and then after holding it, then he'd look at him. And for someone like Sam Rockwell with RDJ, he was like, dude, I love you, and I'm just going to keep riffing and matching.
Some of them did have a connection, but some of them you could tell, oh, this is going to be your guy over here. But
and for the ones that didn't have it, it felt static, and then you felt the time like,
Well, that was the thing. Initially, it's like, oh, my God, it's going to be a four-hour telecast.
Yeah.
But luckily, I mean, they kind of came in on time, so it didn't detract from the ceremony too much. So
I think I messaged you guys during – I said what I think what Robert was saying, too. I was like, we're only – I gave a half-hour lead so I could fast forward through commercials. I'm like, oh, my God, two awards in. This is – what is going on?
Yeah. And luckily, they just did that for some of the key nominations. You don't want to bring – no disrespect to, like, the short documentaries, but you don't want to bring back five documentaries.
You don't have to do that on everyone.
I honestly thought that was what was going on. I was like, oh, my God. Right. We're going to be here till tomorrow.
I was surprised they didn't do it for director, though, because Spielberg came out solo. Yeah. I thought that would have been interesting if they would have brought out, like,
bring up the directors,
Del Toro or Alfonso Cuarón. Yeah.
But do you think it's because the directors caved early?
Like you said. Or are they too egotistical?
Yeah.
I tell you one thing. If I had my druthers, Spielberg could present every year. Like, imagine having your Oscar handed to you from Spielberg. He
plays
favorite.
Along so well. They had a joke.
The jokes with, and stuff that he took part in.
He looks at Kate McKinnon is like, come to me.
Yeah. Who was I sending my tasteful nudes to?
Yeah. And then I think after the show, one of the parties, I don't know if it was the governor's ball or one of them, they served In-N-Out. And there was a photo circulating of Spielberg taking a picture of his In-N-Out burger.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm like,
phone.
I love this guy, man. Yep. He's awesome. And then Paul Giamatti wore his In-N-Out cufflinks. And I guess after he had won an award earlier in the award season, he went to In-N-Out for he brought his award with him. So
right. That was like a homage to Sideways, because at the end of that movie, he's supposed to be In-N-Out, but they couldn't get the rights back then. I'm sure they regret it though.
Nice. I didn't realize that. So we're off to a pretty good start here, and then they hand out the first award, Divine Joy Randolph. Man, great speech, emotional, well-deserved. No surprise there. I think we all sort of picked her for Best Supporting Actress. But that was a great way to get the awards going, was seeing her speech.
And I love Kimmel's comment. See, kids, smoking does pay off.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, here's a tidbit I learned today, and this kind of shocked me. And I might have to look this up, but as far as Best Supporting Actress goes, I think like 10 African-American women have been either nominated or won. I don't know if you guys have that number. But then it said in the category of Best Actress, we're still only at one, Halle Berry.
Right, for Monster
and I'm
Ball.
Like, wait, what?
Oh,
so okay. Even though the Oscars have made some strides, there's still some things that...
Let me tell you, this is a small side bit. I have here, for anyone that can see, Robert's master list that we picked. And I'm telling you one thing. We were one pick away, and we still might do this. I'm taking Rob to Vegas. This man, I was going through, I'm like, yep, this is amazing.
That was in January, and so much, you know, happened after that. But, you know, I know, you know, Joseph and I were pretty much saying it was going to come down to Giamatti and Murphy. You sure called Murphy, so that was a good call.
Here's the here's the trivia bit that I was looking for. So Divine Joy Randolph became the 10th black actress to win Best Supporting Actress. Meanwhile, Halle Berry's win for Monsters Ball remains the sole victory for a black actress. So,
and that was
surprised me.
Early 2000s, right? Yeah. Like 2003 or 2004?
2001.
One.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
At the 2002 Oscars for the 2001 movie.
Yeah, I never saw that movie, but I know it was a
great, great film, great performance.
A while ago.
I recommend it.
Yeah. So, well-deserved win for Divine Joy Randolph. Also love her in Only Murders in the Building. If you watch that, she has a recurring role on that. Not too long after that, this is another, for me, a best moment. They were celebrating or observing the 50th anniversary of the Oscar streaker. And while David Niven was presenting, a streaker ran behind him, and he had one of the all-time great ad-libs when he said it's brave of him to show off his shortcomings, which got a huge laugh. And so Kimmel, you know, he delivers that cue, which supposedly was to cue John Cena, but then he chickens out. And then I love the line when he said, you know, John Cena says the male body is nothing to be made fun of. And
it's not a joke. And he's like, mine is.
Yeah. And so he's like, well, you still got to present the award. And so when he came out with that oversized envelope, I'm like, what am I seeing here?
He's
so
like, funny. I can't present it. I can't let go of the envelope. And Kimmel's like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. And Kimmel said in his monologue on his show the following night that there was all kinds of discussion about whether to move forward with this and how do we make sure that the envelope doesn't fall and blah, 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 blah. Personally, I thought it was hilarious. I thought John Cena was a great sport. But there was a faction of people out there who criticized it and condemned it.
I call them the fuddy-duddies.
What are your thoughts on the John Cena moment?
I thought it was funny. Yeah. I didn't see it coming. When I knew the reference of the David Niven thing from the 70s because my dad had recently told me about it like a month ago. And I had never heard about it, so I had to look it up on YouTube. And I'm like, oh, I just recently found out about this. And I'm like, I'm curious to see where they're going with this. And
I didn't think he'd actually step out. I thought he'd stay behind. Then he started stepping up and went, oh, God, don't drop that. I was like, that envelope can't fall.
Yeah,
don't slip on. Don't have your sand. Don't have a trip on your sandals.
And then when he gets out to the microphone and he goes, costumes.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, my God, this is paying off.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
It was very, very funny, I thought.
And he was really naked out there. There was, like, no little skimpy underwear or jeans.
Someone told me, what's the word?
Sock. I think he had
there was a word for that, I don't know, if they wear in the theaters or something. He had something covering that some area, of him. Maybe. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I would imagine the people backstage got an eye.
I think it's like the movie theaters. I think it's like the movie production when they cover the schlong. Like, that's it. Like the schlong and like part of the crack, and that's it.
What's the there's a word, it starts with an M. I'm trying to remember what it is. I may have to look it up later. But where if a woman wants to do a nude scene, Merkin. Is it a Merkin? Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, maybe
do you remember what the president's name was in Dr. Strangelove? Dr. Merkin Muffley.
Oh, that's right.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I'm sure he had something like that. But I thought it was a funny moment.
Yeah. And, the controversy I don't understand because, you know, we watch movies with bikinis and
skimpy
underwear. So if you're going to complain about that, you might as well complain about the other stuff. It's just outrage, outrage, I like to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. It's kind of hypocritical. But all right. So next up on the timeline, and this is one of my favorite moments when. Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling came out to present together to honor the stunt world, which was a little bit of a publicity ploy because they just premiered The Fall Guy at South by Southwest. So that was a deliberate thing to bring them on stage together. But I thought their chemistry was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And when they started just jabbing each other about the award season and when Emily Blunt was like, not that much of a rivalry. Yeah. And that,
and see, that kind of banter I enjoyed. But the one where when I commented on all you guys, it was the...
was it with Melissa McCarthy?
Melissa McCarthy's banter.
Yeah, that did not work at all.
Very stilted. Yeah.
It just didn't work.
It's weird because she's a comedian.
Well, yeah. I think the premise was that writers make a difference. And so they acted as if they were ad-libbing, which failed miserably. Then they... When they started following the teleprompter, then they said, "Oh yeah, this is better," and the joke just fell flat.
That
didn't work.
It seems like she's fallen flat lately because she recently presented another one and didn't.
Yeah.
Hit either.
Yeah, Robert's got. Yeah. Hmm. She's a little bit of a losing streak. It's, sometimes it's the people when you just leave, like Arnold and Danny DeVito.
Oh yeah.
That was hilarious.
I was dying.
That was great.
Yeah. But Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. Yeah, there were some presenters on that. They just have, it's natural. Just let her run, let her ride.
And when she brought up his painted on abs and he grabbed the mic and said, "She's kidding. She's kidding." I was laughing out loud. Like,
we
I'm
have
like,
to move beyond this. Emily, we have to move beyond this.
And then of course they acknowledge the stunt world, which I'm like, oh, is there a stunt Oscar this year? And then I realized it was just a tribute. And I'm like, all right, it's time to acknowledge the stunt world.
We need
world.
A stunt category
now. You have to.
Hopefully that little segment will like raise awareness. Like,
would it be like a stunt coordinator? So basically like an organizer of a stunt team and a fight coordinator type thing?
The choreographer.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, maybe that's what they need to work out. What exactly are they going to honor? Because they did announce that in a year or so they're going to acknowledge casting, best casting.
Good.
I think it's time to recognize
Oh, my God, how many Oscars did Jackie Chan lose out on now if they do this? Jackie Chan's like, are you kidding
me?
He
should get them retroactively and just have a big box of them to hand to him. So, all right, following that, best actor win, Robert Downey Jr. Such a great moment. Again, not a shocker by any means. He was the front runner.
Yeah.
His win was just well deserved. And he had a charming acceptance speech where he thanked his awful childhood, which I thought was funny. And he was due. He was due.
The night I saw Oppenheimer, opening night, I said, "Best supporting."
Yeah.
Because he played against type.
Yeah,
everyone knows him
as Iron Man,
then a lot of comedic. I mean, a lot of dramatic stuff, and then of course he had a big gap where he had trouble and wasn't doing anything. But that role was
that category had some. Sterling K. Brown was awesome. I mean, there's not a bad performer in there. Yeah.
Right. You know what's interesting is a lot of times when I'm watching a movie and I'm seeing what I think is an Oscar-worthy performance, there's always one moment where I go, there it is. And for Oppenheimer, it's when he's at the end of the movie when he starts getting accused and he's trying to defend his terrible behavior. And I remember sitting there watching it going, there it is. There's the Oscar-winning moment.
That's when he brings up Eisenhower.
Yeah, and I remember thinking the same thing with La La Land when Ryan Gosling says to Emma Stone in La La Land, you're an actress or something, and you see like the hurt and the pain on Emma Stone's character's face. And I remember thinking, there it is, there it is. And she won Best Actor that year. And I remember after seeing La La Land, I posted on Facebook, congratulations to Emma Stone on her Oscar win, which was still 6 months away.
Yeah, sure,
and
sure.
She won.
Yep.
So yeah, there's and then the same thing happened with the Holdovers when Divine Joy Randolph is in the kitchen at the party, and she's had a little too much to drink.
Oh, it's a great scene.
And she
yeah.
goes off down. The rails about yeah. her son. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. And again, I remember sitting there going, there it is.
Yep.
Yes.
There's the Oscar-winning monologue.
That's a powerful moment.
That's a great point. And when you think back to all the previous winners and what they won for, there's that one moment.
The Oscar yeah. moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great performance overall, but you're like, there right. it is. That's what...
Yeah.
What was the deal with, speaking of Downey Jr. winning, what was the deal with Tim Robbins messing that up? Is there a tension between the two? Because
no, I think that was a genuine faux pas. And the article that I saw earlier today, maybe that's who he voted for.
Was the dude De Niro.
And yeah. Okay. And then when he said that Oscar winning performance, and then he corrected himself and said Oscar worthy performance, and the audience kind of laughed it off. They're like, well, he might have just, you know, tipped his hand and showed who he voted for. But I think it was a genuine slip up. And
he did
nod
to De Niro after that, too. But I just didn't know if that was deliberate or an accident to the Downey Jr.
Okay, so it wasn't just me.
I was wondering about that.
Did he just have a Warren Beatty moment?
Right.
Wait, I'm confused. So what happened after that?
Well, basically, he just pretty much snubbed Downey Jr.'s moment there. And he's like, and the Oscar winner. And he goes, oh, the nominee to De Niro.
Yeah.
And he goes, I think you're the winner anyway, De Niro, something like that, he said,
yeah.
right?
Oh, I didn't catch that.
I agree with Rob. When I watched it, I almost felt like, oh, he already knows who the winner is. And now the whole Oscars are rigged is going to be trending on
right.
Twitter. Because instead of waiting for the moment, he just said it right there.
Yeah, imagine had he won, that would have been a scandal.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
What did he know?
I think it's what you said, that he voted for De Niro. And I wanted to bring that up, too. I watched Oppenheimer a second time. I watched Killers of the Flower Moon. My gosh, it's 14, 15 hours of my life with the two movies, watching them twice. But I'll have to say, though, I love Downey Jr., but I like De Niro a little more, and I'll tell you why.
Hmm.
De Niro, for me, had a little bit more, just a little bit more layers than Downey Jr. did in that film. Downey Jr. Is pretty much very menacing and sinister in that film, as is De Niro. But there's a little bit of more humanism and a little bit more nuance than De Niro, especially in that third act with DiCaprio finding out about his young son, and there was that really bonding moment there, and I was like, wow, I can't stand this guy. There's a little bit of life to De Niro in this role, and it just goes to show the power of De Niro in that
there
writing.
Was a moment in Flower Moon where De Niro acknowledges that, what we're doing is wrong.
Like, right.
And so when you can, I know how we're not trying to humanize the villain, but when you can put those layers in there, we're like, hey, this is what I am.
Right.
I know.
And they are human in the end of the day. Yeah. There's nuance and redemption to be found.
Well, any interesting villain has a motivation to do what they do, and sometimes you're sympathetic. I bring up an example of Javier Bardem, who was in Skyfall, and he was a sympathetic villain. Like, you felt for him that he had been abandoned. And
when he's in that glass case, I'm like,
I was like
Judy, this is awkward. What do you say?
I like the sympathetic villain. I liked it. Now, what I liked about Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in Oppenheimer is his arc. Like, you know, the movie starts off with him as like a supporting character, you know, supporting Oppenheimer, and all of a sudden you see this spiral where all of a sudden he takes this dark turn, and you're like, oh, geez, he's the villain in this story. And so it was cool that he didn't reveal that until the end, that he was the villain. So
abusing his power in that role, too.
Yeah.
Next up, Nick, you touched on this a little bit, but the Arnold and Danny DeVito moment. You know, they come out and they go, you know, they asked us to present together for obvious reasons. Of course, twins.
Right.
But then when they did a 180 and said, we both tried to kill Batman. And when Arnold said, Batman, you son of a bitch, I lost it. I thought, and then they see him sitting in the crowd, and I'm sure this had to have been planned, but it felt very like
Keaton's another one that can just roll with it.
And when they cut to his reaction, he's just staring dagger. I wanted him to go, you want to get nuts? Yeah. Let's get nuts.
That's what I heard him say. I heard him say it, even though he didn't say it.
And then when DeVito's like, I want to see you after the governor's ball, and that's when he did the gesture. Yeah.
That was awesome. That was great.
It was Arnold's second son of a bitch that broke me. Because he goes, well, how did he beat you? With heat? No, with the power of love. He threw me out a window. That Batman, that son of a bitch. It's like, he's right there. Bitch. There he is. And you just hear when they're cut to Keaton.
How dare you show your face here, man.
Son of a
that
bitch.
That was real clever. I laughed hard at that.
Yeah, that was a great moment. So kudos to whoever put all that together and placed Keaton where the camera can get a shot of him and
was
everything.
Was that for the visual effects award?
That was for Godzilla. Yeah, so let's talk about that.
So
I'm glad you brought that up. So, yeah, to hear Schwarzenegger go, the award goes to Godzilla.
Yeah.
That was great. And the fact that Godzilla won an Oscar and the team that came up to accept it had the little golden Godzilla.
They all had the Godzillas.
That was really cool. The director had a wonderful speech. The only problem is I wish they'd just given him a translator.
Yeah, he should.
So he could have said it in Japanese, and it would.
Because
I read the transcript, and it was a great speech. It's like what I was. It was like I felt like Rocky Balboa. You know, how I was motivated. Yeah. I was like, man, this is, and I was like, oh, that's what he was saying.
Yeah, he really struggled with it, and it was unfortunate, but it was a great moment to see that movie win. And I hope that inspires a lot of people to check it out when it comes out on DVD. I guess it's going to be released in Japan on May 1st, hopefully here in the U.S. soon after. And I hope a lot of people check it out.
Kudos to Robert for talking me off the outrage ledge, because I was like, I can't believe it. Why did they do it? He's like, Nick, it was Japan didn't do it. It's like, my God, you're right. It's not the Oscars. It's Japan. It's not the Academy. Right.
Yeah, they chose the film.
Japan betrayed him.
Just like in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great.
I was like, yeah, Robert's right. He talked me down.
I'm absolutely convinced that had they submitted Godzilla as a foreign language film, it would have won. I'm convinced of it.
I think they need to get rid of that rule.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just...
Because you were mentioning that there's another film that France didn't get to submit.
Well, right, because Anatomy of Fallen's best... or gets nominated for Best International, does not get nominated for International simply because France didn't submit it. They submitted The Taste of Things, which is a wonderful movie as well, but it should go by release date. You know, if two great Japanese films are great that year, they should be nominated too.
Right? I agree. Yeah. At least submitted for consideration, yeah.
Right.
And the funny thing is, I'm on Threads now. I left Twitter a year ago, and someone had asked on Threads, what was your favorite movie of 2023? And I commented and I said, well, it came out in 2023. I didn't see it till 2024, but I said Godzilla. And someone responded with basically an eye roll in text. And I said, did you see Godzilla? And they said, no, I didn't. He goes, after the last few Godzilla movies, I had no interest. I said, you are dead wrong on this. I said, you got to see this new movie.
Yeah, you can't judge like that if you haven't actually seen it. Yeah.
Right. I said, this is Dunkirk with Godzilla. And so I'm hoping that I convince this guy to check it out. And if you're listening and you haven't seen Godzilla and you're like, how did it win an Oscar? Trust me, when it comes out on DVD or when it starts streaming, please check it out. And I saw the black and white version, which I recommend. Check out black and white.
That was wonderful too.
Yeah.
Some people were doubting Godzilla Minus One winning. Did you hear about this? Simply because it wasn't on the Oscar portal. Simply because when the Hollywood releases the Godzilla movie, which is coming out soon, there's a deal where they have to pull their movie back on every platform available.
So a
lot of the Oscar voters, they were worried, weren't able to see the film, but I don't know. I was like, you can't snub Godzilla here. It'd be too much outrage. And,
Robert, what are you doing to me? Are you trying to... I don't want to go with the conspiracy theory with the Academy. Now, then you bring this up.
He's got a direct line to the Academy.
Stop playing with my emotions, man!
Well, let's be happy it triumphed and won.
It did.
I guess it's going to get a re-release in Japan, which hopefully will pad its box office.
But also, Robert made a point. It hasn't come out in most international. Like, it hasn't opened in India and China, where you have like 2 billion people.
This is the Hollywood upcoming Godzilla Kong movie coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
They can't overlap. The studios can't overlap with Japan in the release date. It's like a 70-day window.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I saw the trailer for that new King Kong, and it looks awful.
It won't be as good.
With the little baby.
Won't be as good as this one. This minus one, I can tell you that.
Right.
Yeah.
I read today that someone said Godzilla sports a Thanos-like glove?
Yeah.
No, Kong does.
Kong does?
But he has the glow of Thanos, the purple glow of Thanos. That took a weird, like in 2014, they said like, oh, what if monsters were real? And it had that, how would you react kind of thing. How would we react?
Then also, that one was good.
Then we also went like space technology, and it's
All right. Now, of course, when you watch the Oscars, you expect some politics. And I want to say this about politics at the Oscar. When you're given the spotlight and you have hundreds of millions of people possibly watching across the planet, if you're going to take, you know, your chance to deliver your message, what better platform is there? I hate when someone says, oh, why are they doing this at the Oscar? Because no one's listening in your living room. You know, you're on stage and there's a lot of eyes on you. So if you want to deliver your message, go ahead. One of my favorite moments at the Oscars was the acceptance speech for 20 Days in Maripol, if I'm pronouncing that correct.
Yep.
And when he said, I don't think any director has ever stood up here and said, I will give this Oscar back if I didn't have to produce this film and this war never happened. And I'm like, that's some powerful stuff.
Yeah, he said, right. I wish I didn't have to make this movie.
Yeah, and there was stunned silence. Yep. Like, everyone was like, what did he just say? And that was, I thought that was a pretty great moment.
Yep.
That was pretty
cool. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, so that was a neat moment. Which now brings us to what might be one of the top 10 Oscar moments of all time. The I'm Just Ken, or what's the song?
I'm Just Ken.
I'm Just Ken. And so the camera's up in the lights. They turn pink, and the camera tilts down to him sitting in the audience behind Margot Robbie, and she is laughing uncontrollably. And you see Billie Eilish behind him laughing uncontrollably. And when he begins that number, you're like, oh, here we go. Buckle up, buttercup. And it was enormously entertaining, funny. And then you see the Kens from the movie as background dancers. And I didn't, you know, I'm a big Marilyn Monroe guy, and I didn't even make the connection initially that it was an homage to Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. The dancers had the same wardrobe on and everything, and here's him with the pink outfit on and everything.
He got Slash to show up.
Yeah.
That was great.
I was like, what's Slash doing at the Oscars? This
is
great.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so Ryan just went into it 110%, and he really showed off his, you know, Disney kid dancing and singing skills. And I thought, and this is a crazy thing to say, I thought he sang this number better at the Oscars than any of the singing he did in La La Land. Like, I remember when he was in La La Land, I'm like, okay, he's a fine actor. I don't think he's all that great a singer in this movie. But then he showed some real chops during this performance. And I saw people online, you know, as the broadcast is happening, they're like, he sang that live. It was not lip synced.
Yeah. Right.
He didn't lose his breath. He stayed on key, and he did all the choreography. Yep. And people who are in musical theater were like, I am really impressed with what he accomplished.
The man was a Mouseketeer. He's been doing it for a while. He used to be next to Timberlake.
And Britney.
Yeah, and the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah. But I've seen people since on social media say that they've watched that number 15-20 times now. It's taken on a life of its own.
Now let me ask you guys this. Yeah, everyone's talking about John Mulaney, and, you know, did a wonderful thing. How about Ryan Gosling hosting the Oscars?
Hey,
I don't know.
If he's not nominated,
is it too much of a good thing? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Because the role of the host, like Jimmy Kimmel, is to kind of kick things off, step back, let it do its thing, and then maybe pop on occasionally. And I don't know if Ryan would be suited for that role. I kind of like what he did this year.
It reminds me of James Franco that year when he
did
it. And it was not,
what a disaster that was.
That would be, no.
Yeah.
2010, right?
Interesting to think about. Now, you mentioned Mulaney. Mulaney, I think, would be a great host. When he came out and presented what he presented for, I forget what it was, he was very, very funny, and he clearly has a love and a passion for films.
Yep.
He recounted the entire plot of The Field of Dreams, and I'm like, okay, this guy, I think he need to throw his name in the hat for a future hosting gig, I think. Yeah. And he based on his past experience on Saturday Night Live, he took part in that the big famous musical number on SNL about the lobster being ordered in a diner.
Yeah,
it was brilliant. It was like a parody of Les Miserables. And he has the chops to pull off a hosting gig. So that's who got my vote.
Mulaney, he's probably in my top three of stand-ups today.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see him live back in 2016 before he got super huge. I think people who have a background in stand-up do the best at hosting big gigs like that.
Yeah, your Steve Martins and Billy Crystals and going back to Johnny Carson.
That would be the only thing that I would have. I would say I would give it to Mulaney over Gosling.
Oh, yeah.
As I think it just historically runs better with giving it to those type of guys rather than the handsome leading men.
Yeah.
You know, not that there's anything against that, but I just think that they have more of that direct audience, you know, give and take, rather than a leading man who 80% of the time is acting in front of a camera.
Yeah, and
just a different style.
I agree. But, and a comedian could read the room and maybe know if something's working or not, that sort of thing. So, Academy, think about that.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I also feel that, you know, who wants this role bad? Bill Maher. His Friday night shows. He's always begging for it. Yeah. It would be very controversial. And like, look, I don't agree with him on everything, but I do think he'd do a hilarious job nonetheless.
I'm afraid, again, I bring up Ricky Gervais. I'm afraid he would be too cynical and mock Hollywood
he would.
More than it deserves.
Right.
You know, this is, I watch the Oscars because I love movies and I'm passionate about film, and I don't care if these Oscars are the actors are patting each other on the back, and I don't want to see someone to come up and go, "You bunch of phonies, look at you." Yeah. I don't want to see that. That's not why I'm tuning in.
If he could tame it down,
I don't think Gervais is.
No, he's way.
I don't think he's funny
he's
at all.
I don't know why they keep asking. He's probably saying, "Why do you keep asking me?"
When
you ask me the second time,
yeah,
I didn't
he did the Golden Globes a number of times. Yeah. And I can't watch it. I'm like, it's like
he's
watching
very,
a train
something
wreck.
Something very off putting about that dude.
What
I don't know is
why have they never brought back Tina Fey and Amy Poehler?
Oh,
yeah. They've done the Golden Globes a few times, and they're great.
Abusing in it.
And they can make biting commentary. They do some good stuff, but. It doesn't come across as mean-spirited. So,
right.
Yeah. The next best moment I have is when Billie Eilish and her brother, what's his name? He's escaping me, and I apologize.
Phineas. I don't know his last
name. You know, I love the song. I think the song is beautiful. I remember when it started playing in the theater, I'm like, oh, my God, who is this? And then it said Billie Eilish. I was like, really? And so her performance was great on the show, and then they win the award, and I laughed out loud when she was thanking her former teachers, and she brought one up by name and said, even though you didn't like me, you did your job well. And I'm like, God, imagine sitting on your sofa and Billie Eilish calls you out and says, you didn't like me. And I think her point of that was, look where I am now. I think she did it like she wanted to look as if she was acknowledging her teacher, but I think she was sticking it to her teacher.
If you could find that teacher, that teacher's probably going, and look who finally had learned to hit the notes. Hate me all you want. You're welcome.
Yeah. But, yeah, what a talent. And so one of the little tidbits that I learned is that Billie Eilish and Phineas have now won two Oscars. First one for the song from No Time to Die. The Bond song.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And so at 22 years old, Billie Eilish is the youngest person ever to have two Oscars. Yeah,
which was 2 years ago and then now for Barbie.
Yeah. Wow. Very, very impressive. And
there was a funny meme going around. Scorsese won Oscar.
Yeah.
Eilish too.
You imagine how John Williams is going to feel at some point. John Williams is going to go, wait a minute.
Could you imagine if they're at the same party and Billy's like, man, 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 like teasing Scorsese? That's pretty amazing. But she's very talented, and so is Phineas, and well deserved. Let's talk about one of the worst moments. Not to dwell too much on negativity, but we got to bring up the In Memoriam segment. Man, they screw it up year after year after year. You know, they used to play music, go full screen with the image and a name.
Yeah.
Early on, you would hear the audience react, which I didn't like because it became like this popularity contest where some people got more applause than others.
Yeah, yeah.
So they killed the mics and just played the music and played the graphic. And I thought, okay, I think they got it. But then, of course, there's always the post-broadcast discussion of who was left out, and there's always big names that were left out. Now, over the last few years, they started this trend where they don't even go full screen with the graphics. It's on a screen on the stage that we at home are squinting to see who's on the screen. And then that last page that had 40 names on it that we're supposed to look at, and there were some really big names that were squeezed onto that list, like Treat Williams and
Kenneth Anger.
Yeah, and Suzanne Summers, who granted, you know, was more of a TV star than a movie star, but she was in several movies. And imagine playing that clip where she's in the Thunderbird and American Graffiti, and she turns to Richard Dreyfuss and says, "I love you." And he's like, "Who's that blonde?" But you could have thrown that moment in. It would have been really cool. How do they screw this up year after year after year?
Yeah, I'm curious to see the process of putting that together. Like, is it three people just like, all right, let's get these names here. These are the ones we can leave off at the end and squeeze together. And how they edited, or they had so many different screens and they'd put five people up at once. And I don't know. That was one of the weakest points of the show.
When they played Time to Say Goodbye, I thought, okay, this is just going to be the background music. Then he comes out. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my God. And the camera's going to linger on him and his
Bocelli, son. Is that what it was? Andrea Bocelli.
Yeah, Andrea Bocelli. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful song. And I thought it was a great choice. But at some point, I was expecting him to go full screen, and they never did. And I don't understand conversation.
This, was this one of those years where a lot more people got.
Well, there were a lot. And you notice almost early on, they included Richard, the Lewis. Comedian, Lewis, who just died like 2 weeks prior.
Right.
They got him in there and got his picture in there.
Yeah.
But then they relegated some people to text at the end. And I hate to say this because I know when they started including a lot of like production people, and I know this isn't true, but I joke, you know, Key Grips and Best Boys, like, is that really necessary? Can we put them on a website where you can say go
entertainment
visit?
Lawyer?
Yeah, I was just gonna say entertainment lawyer.
Yeah. Do they
like publicists?
Do you really take out, you know, I'm trying to think of the one actor who was relegated toward the end who a lot of people loved. I can't remember his name, of course. But you relegate them to the end, but you're recognizing an entertainment lawyer. I personally think that was a mistake. You know, do all the big names up front, give the people what they want, and then say, you know, they always say, oh, to see the complete list, visit Oscars.com or whatever. Do that.
I'm in agreement. I want to know, you know, when, you know, God forbid, with Raquel Welch, when the time comes, you're like, when I want to see the actors, directors, famous screenwriters, the ones who.
The big ones.
Yeah, like the really big ones. Like, you know, I don't need to know, you know, when the Transformers writer kicks.
Right.
That's okay.
Yeah, I remember the one year, you know, you're sitting there watching it going, who are they going to leave off? Who are they going to leave off? And the one year they acknowledged Michael Jackson, which I thought was odd because the only movie that I know of that he ever had anything to do with was Captain EO. But they left off Farrah Fawcett. And what's odd about that is they both died on the same day. And her death was overshadowed by Michael Jackson's death. Because I remember my sister reached out to me and said, did you hear who died? And I said, yeah, Farrah Fawcett. She said, no, Michael Jackson. And I'm like, Michael Jackson? So his death overshadowed Farrah Fawcett. Then during the In Memoriam, she was left off entirely.
Wow.
And she did multiple movies, and Michael Jackson. Right.
Could you imagine if they ever, when the time comes, if they ever did that to Mel Brooks?
Oh my God.
Could you, you know,
Well, Frederick Forrester was left off, and he's an Oscar nominee in Apocalypse Now, too, and Falling Down. Big, really big movies. Worked with Francis Ford Coppola in a few films, too.
Yeah, and these are the things where I don't mind if you want to, you know, run it at 1.5 speed where you can get, you know, some people get that famous line, you know, like, oh, you're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And when the time comes, you put it on there.
Yeah, yeah.
An iconic line, but just move it. Move the...
Yeah. Here's the name I was trying to think of. Burt Young, Paulie from Rocky.
He was left out.
Yeah, he was condensed at the end.
He was in the, okay.
In as text. Now, come on. Paulie from Rocky, you're going to say, nah, let's put in the entertainment lawyer.
Yeah.
Really?
Right. He deserves his own clip.
Yeah.
That role alone.
You're exactly right. Yeah. So, yeah, and I saw a lot of reactions after the fact saying, you know, but, Academy, get this right, please.
But they still don't. I don't know why. This is not the first time we're... I'm sure we're having this conversation in some manner.
It's every year they butcher it.
Yeah.
Somehow, and all they need to do is every week the committee needs to get together, find out who sadly died, put it in an archive. There you go. I could do it for them if they wanted to.
Pull up a clip.
You know.
Yeah, I could put together that clip reel in an afternoon on my Adobe Premiere. I don't know why.
You should make a mock one and send it to him and retire.
That's right. Here you go. I saved you some
You're
money.
Welcome.
I'm going to go over some of these.
What would be weird is when Joseph's in the 2025 one. You're like, wait, what?
No.
Who made this list?
That's right. Yeah. All right. So let me look up some of the, or here's some of the little trivia things that I looked up. Let's see. Poor Things. So Oppenheimer was the night's biggest winner, taking home 7 total Oscars. Mm-hmm. Poor Things, surprising to me, really, was the second biggest winner of the night, taking home
four
awards. It's not my kind of
movie. I know, and I'm saying that to tease you.
It beat The Spread, which is what I'm pissed off about.
Now, I saw a guy, and I was tempted to play some audio from this today, but the language is a little rough. But I saw a guy, I think he was an Irishman, walking with his phone, reviewing Poor Things, and it was hysterical. He's like, and then I'm going to do a terrible Irish accent, but he's like, and this woman would put anything she could find into her, and I'm like, what? And he went on and on and on. And he's like, I wish I could unsee what. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think this movie is for me.
Robert and I, we got to see it on the big screen a couple weeks ago. And
I saw it a second time. I wanted to see it on the.
Were you guys able to make eye contact afterwards?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's my type of movie, so.
The ceremony clocked in at 3 hours, 26 minutes. I like the earlier start time because there was time for me
the
to
7
watch.
7 a.m. was brilliant.
Please keep it at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Screw California. Because they always for them, like, oh, they have to get home from work. No. Yeah,
right.
No, it's the Oscars. It's Sunday.
And we just had daylight savings time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gave me time to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm afterward, which was hysterical. Let's see. Let's look at some records. Christopher Nolan and his wife, Emma Thomas, along with Charles Roven, were part of the producing team that won Best Picture for Oppenheimer. They notably became the first married couple to win this category since Richard Zanuck and Lil Finney Zanuck. Lil Finney? Sounds like a rapper. won for producing Driving Miss Daisy. Another married couple found success on Oscar Sunday. Justine Triet and her husband Arthur Harari won Best Original Screenplay for Anatomy of a Fall. She was also the first French woman to ever win this writing award. Cillian Murphy, as I mentioned earlier, was the first Irish-born actor to win an Oscar. We mentioned Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas made history. He's the youngest duo with 2 Oscar wins. Let's see.
My friend goes, Billie Eilish and her Harry Potter sounding brother. Phineas. I was like, yeah, I'm like, you know, there are plenty of people named Phineas. He's like, who? I went, oh, touche.
So yeah, those two broke several records. They said it was the fastest consecutive win for best original song by any songwriter since Tim Rice achieved 3 wins within 5 years in the 1990s. So their 2 wins were like the shortest amount of time between 2 wins. They became the first songwriting duo to win original song twice within the span of 3 years since Alan Menken and the late Howard Ashman achieved the feat with Under the Sea from Little Mermaid and the title song from Beauty and the Beast. I mean, that's some elite company they're in.
Absolutely.
Here's some sad records. Diane Warren continued her streak for the most nominations in the Best Music Original Song category without a win.
Really?
She's the Susan Lucci of Best Music Original Song, 15 nominations.
She did the Flaming Hot movie, correct?
This doesn't say what she was nominated for.
I believe she was nominated for that. The Frito-Lay Flaming Hot
movie.
That's
what it has to be, yep.
It's called The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. She's been nominated a lot since like the 90s.
Yeah.
When she gets an envelope, yay. But you know what? I will say this, me personally, that's like making it to the Final Four. You win. When you get to the Final Four, you are in elite status.
Be there.
When you're nominated,
be there.
Yeah.
The Boy and the Heron became the second non-English film to win Best Animated Feature.
So happy that won. Happy that won. I was surprised.
I heard it was great. Yeah.
A lot of people thought Spider-Man was. I picked Spider-Man for my pool, and I went 20 for 23 in my pool, but that was the one I lost.
No, that, that's okay, because that doesn't get us kicked out of Vegas. You, you go perfect, we're banned from Vegas.
Yeah,
you
right.
You lose just enough.
Right.
Now, some people said that the reason Spider-Man didn't win is because they've already announced the third part of a trilogy. So they said, well, we can give them the award
Time. It's getting the Lord of the Rings treatment?
Yeah.
Right. Just backlog everything on Return of the King?
That's exactly. So Vegas, put your money on Spider-Man in a couple years. Let's see. Emma Stone won her second Best Actress award for Poor Things.
We have to talk about that when we get a chance.
Sure. She's the second woman to be nominated for acting in Best Picture from the same film, following Frances McDormand for Nomadland in 2020. Divine Joy Randolph. Oh, we talked about that. 10th Black actress to win Best Supporting Actress. Only one Black woman has won Best Actress. Wes Anderson, who won his first Oscar ever, which is shocking, for Best Live Action Short Film, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, did not show up to accept his award. And from what I heard, he's not very comfortable making speeches. So
he was at home making a diorama made of corduroy.
Because he was actually making a film, I heard. He was in production.
Was it? Okay.
Yes. It was a good excuse.
But I love Wes Anderson. I didn't even know he was putting out a short film this year.
Yeah, they're on Netflix. Yeah, he did like a series of them.
How have I not seen these?
Wow.
And Benedict Cumberbatch is great in that.
Right.
I gotta watch.
Quite wonderful.
You guys might know this. I'm gonna test your film knowledge right now. This is the third nomination for Robert Downey Jr. What were his first two nominations?
Chaplin.
Chaplin's his first one in 92.
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder is the second one. Yes,
that's right. I forgot
the supporting actor for 2008.
Yep. Think about the controversy that movie generated, and then you go, you know, he was nominated for an Oscar.
Wow.
I thought for sure that film was going to be controversial upon release, and it wasn't.
I thought it was brilliant. It was brilliant. Well,
it's a great
social commentary.
Well, because they call it out in the movie.
Right.
That's why Brandon T. Jackson calls it out.
Yeah. Like,
the only good role they gave to Crocodile Dundee.
And it generated that classic line, what do you mean, you people? It's so great. So, those are the films that he's been nominated for. Oppenheimer, Chaplin, and Tropic Thunder.
This is one of those weird years where no Tom Hanks, no George Clooney, no Brad Pitt, no Leo in the nomination. I went, huh.
Well, I think Leo should have been there for Killers.
Well, he should have been.
He didn't really campaign for it.
Here's another unfortunate record. This actor has been nominated 4 times and now holds the record for the living actor with the most nominations for Best Supporting Actor without winning an Oscar.
Giamatti?
No,
Giamatti's only been nominated twice.
Only twice.
No, yeah.
I'll even name the movies. This might make it easier. The Kids Are All Right, Fox
Mark Ruffalo,
Catcher, Spotlight, and Poor Things. So Mark Ruffalo, 4 nominations, 0 wins.
He was hilarious in Poor Things.
And all of his nominees were supporting, have been supporting so far.
Yeah.
And final trivia here. Which film went 0-10 on Oscar night?
Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon.
What happened there?
I wasn't expecting it to walk away with nothing. I haven't seen the movie, but it's Scorsese. Yeah.
But do you think that explains that look on Robert De Niro's face near the end when the camera lingered on him and he had that look of...
Yeah.
And someone cut away because Robert doesn't look like he wants to be here tonight. Right, right behind him is Scorsese, and I don't know if that is his wife, his mom, or his wife.
Who's
Martin Scorsese?
Yeah, that was Scorsese's mom. She's 130.
His mom passed away, but she was in Goodfellas and Casino.
Right,
when she was alive.
But this little trivia note gets worse. This marks director Martin Scorsese's third film to go 0-10.
Is the
Oscar
Irishman
night.
And what was it? The Wolf
Gangs
of Wall Street.
Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York was there.
Whoa!
He has gone 0-10 3 times.
Wait a minute, Gangs of New York that had Daniel Day-Lewis. He's an automatic on usually.
Right, but Adrian Brody won Best Actor for The Pianist that year.
Wow. I don't know who Martin Scorsese pissed off, but Hollywood has vendetta.
He had somebody killed in the early 90s. Yes,
there's a lot of people out there, from what I see, even certain critics just don't like him because of his backlash against Marvel films. But my gosh, my grandfather wouldn't like Marvel.
Yeah.
So why do we hold it up for
him? Yeah, that.
How dare you not Marvel?
It's kind of weird when you put it that way, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, I think it's sad. I think it's sad, too, that he's only won once.
Yeah.
And out of 10 nominees. You, he should have won for Goodfellas, I feel.
Oh, I agree.
Raging Bull.
Yeah. They keep doing this. They're going to let the AI pick it, and the AI's going to go, listen, it's going to do it.
So, for the record, Oppenheimer won 7 of 13. Poor Things won 4 of 11. Killers of Flower Moon, 0 out of 10. Barbie only got one win out of 8 nominations. That was for Best Song. I personally think Barbie should have won production design, because when you look at behind the scenes, most of those effects were practical, which I think was an amazing accomplishment. But maybe viewers didn't know that and thought it was all CGI.
It was tough, though. Joe, it really
they
was.
Go up against Poor Things.
Yeah, they're both immaculate. It's a little hard to.
Yeah.
And Poor Things, the fantastical settings.
Yes.
On it. It's hard to top. When you have fantastical, it's hard to top. But,
yeah.
Barbie's it's great in production design, too, though.
Here's another snub that you may have noticed. What film went 0 for 7? Maestro.
Oh, okay.
Which is a Netflix production. Yeah. And
Bradley Cooper was.
I thought Bradley Cooper was Hollywood's darling, but.
And he was campaigning harder than anyone else.
He wrote it, he directed it, he starred in it, and got snubbed. Yep. Interesting. Is Hollywood turning on pretty boy Brad Cooper?
And then the makeup, too. Not even makeup. A lot of people thought that was going to win, but it went to Poor Things.
But you know what's interesting about that? I'm glad you brought that up. There was some criticism early on that Bradley Cooper played a Jewish man and needed prosthetics to achieve that look when they probably should have cast a Jewish man. That was the criticism that the movie got early on. And I think what we're seeing is the backlash from that.
I think
people
might have
been afraid to vote for it because of that.
But with that, it's like, okay, Cillian Murphy is an atheist Irish guy playing an American Jew.
I know.
Are you really going to nitpick about stuff like that? And it's, yeah.
But I there might have been some backlash.
We'll find out if Jonathan Glazer ever gets a nomination if we're going to go conspiracy theories. Because I was like, okay, he had his speech. It's fine by me. But you think he burned down an orphanage or something.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Now, I can't help talking about Bradley Cooper. I'm thinking about the clip from Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis when he's interviewing John Hamm, and he says, based on Bradley Cooper's success, does that make you optimistic for good-looking idiots or something? And that's when John Hamm just broke character and started laughing. But, I don't know. I don't know if there's a backlash. I don't know. Honeymoon is over, but we'll see. I'm sure he'll bounce back.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the tally, Anatomy of a Fall, 1 out of 5. American Fiction, which I thought was going to do better, 1 out of 5 awards. Holdovers, 1 out of 5 awards. Zone of Interest, 2 for 5. Napoleon, nothing. The Creator, nothing. Mission Impossible, which I didn't realize received any nominations, went 0 for 2. Naiad, 0 for 2. Past Lives, 0 for 2. And Society of the Snow, another Netflix production. I can't help but wonder, too, if there's some backlash against a Netflix production. Now, didn't Netflix purchase the Egyptian Theater so that their movies can get a theatrical screening to be eligible for the Oscars?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but wonder if there's a little bit of a backlash from that. Like, maybe they're not considered in that same,
on the same level as the major studios.
They better get ready, because Bezos, Amazon did the same thing, and Apple's going to do the same thing. They all want their movies up for Oscars. They got to
screen them in New York and LA.
They're going to find a theater. They're going to buy it out.
Well, these prestige movies are nominated. They do that, but they have a very small window.
Yeah.
And Maestro played here for 1 week at the MGR Troy, and then they come and go, and there's no box office receipts on the films either. So I do. And Spielberg was not happy with Netflix in 2018 about. I think that's why Roma didn't win Best Picture, probably because of the Netflix controversy.
Yeah. All right, so let's recap some of the key awards from the night. This year there were 10 Best Picture nominees. Oppenheimer won for Best Picture. I'm not sure if I agree with it or not. Now, I saw Oppenheimer in my living room, so maybe that was a strike against it. Maybe I should have seen it in the theater. I thought it was an odd choice to present the hearing on whether or not Oppenheimer should be stripped of his security credentials. I thought that was a weird way for the movie to go. So I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I thought Nolan made some strange decisions with the nudity and sex scene in the movie. I thought were really sort of odd. But I don't know if there was any other film released this year that was better than Oppenheimer. One movie that I regret having not seen prior to the ceremony because it was nowhere to be found was American Fiction. I really wanted to see American Fiction. It wasn't on DVD. It wasn't streaming. It was out of theaters. And so I went in blind. And but based on the trailer that I saw, I'm like, that looks really intriguing. And I can't help but wonder that had they maybe done a little re-release after it got its nomination, that maybe more people would have seen it. And
given a little bump.
Yeah.
I think
It was released in December. It lost a lot of momentum. Then it jumped back. And then it won that adapted screenplay. But
Yeah, it did win that. Yeah. But as far as Best Picture goes, I guess you go with Oppenheimer due to, you know, lack of a better option. What are your guys' thoughts? Oppenheimer was it?
Oppenheimer is like sixth or seventh on my list out of those 10.
I
mean, I really like the film, but I do think it's deeply flawed. I think that it's got a very bizarre structure. You mentioned some of the things. I thought that was odd and misguided as well.
There's part of the in the brown community, Indian community, where they're like, "What is that? Like, like, why is it in that scene?"
I
think it hits you over the head a lot. It's very redundant over and over again. It's like, we get it. The bomb's gonna have consequences. We have to hear it over 100 times in this film. If you took a shot every time they talked to the consequences, you would die within an hour.
I just turned the page. I realized there's three more titles: Past Lives, Poor Things, and Zone of Interest. So, if not Oppenheimer, what's your pick for Best Picture for 2023?
I'm a big Scorsese guy. Killers of the Flower Moon's my absolute favorite. And that second viewing, I watched it first in the theater, and I wasn't sure if it was my favorite of the year. And then when I sat down, I'm like, I watched it again a second time. It really knocked my socks off. I started seeing and noticing things I didn't notice before, and just the performances and the writing and the themes and just the direction. It's just so brilliant. And it's unlike anything Scorsese ever made. There's a scope and a vision of that film that's extraordinary.
I have to admit, a line made me laugh that Jimmy Kimmel had when he said when he was watching Killers of the Flower Moon, he had his mail forwarded to the theater. And that's a commentary on the fact that these movies are too damn long.
Three hours.
That's one of the reasons I didn't see that. It's one of the reasons I didn't see Irishman. Even though I sat down for a three-hour Oscar broadcast, I can't sit down for a three-hour film. And maybe it's just a protest on my part, but Hollywood, enough with the three-hour films.
Yeah.
Give us 2 hours and some change.
Scorsese's in a little bit of a string, though, right now.
Yeah, but a story like that, Joe, Killers of the Flower Moon, it's so important. It's so grandiose. I'm forgiving on the three-and-a-half-hour mark, but I do think in the theater, though, they should bring back intermissions. And I know some theaters are actually doing it, and then Apple intervened and said no. And I'm like, no, there should be intermissions. Give a 10-minute, let people go to the bathroom, get drinks.
Didn't they do that for Hateful Eight?
Yes.
That's my least favorite Tarantino movie, but I thought that part was cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Who won editing?
Oppenheimer won editing.
Hoyt van Hoytema.
It is well edited, but
that's got to be the Danish for Billy D. Williams.
I want to bring up the editing. Yeah. I want to bring up the editing real quick. Why does best editing always have to mean the most cuts?
Right.
It should be what makes the best flow, the best story.
What's the most seamless? Yeah. And I thought the Killers of the Flower Moon, I thought, was better edited. It would have been more seamless for Oppenheimer was like cut, cut, cut all the time, which is impressive. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know the rhythm.
Yeah, editing isn't about having a 5-minute movie. It's about having, telling a good, you know exactly. Star Wars.
Yeah.
Best example.
Great editing there. Yeah.
Editing got it a nomination and it won an Oscar for it.
Now, that's another criticism I had for Oppenheimer, and I was a little taken aback when it won Best Editing because when I watched it, I felt the pacing of the first hour or so was very choppy. And quick. Like, there was no pauses. There was no room for thought. Like, it was just line after line after line after line. And I saw on Threads, you know the actor Diedrich Bader? He commented on Threads. He was talking to his son. They watched it. And he asked his son, what did you think of it? And he said, it felt like a 3-hour trailer. And I'm like, that is a perfect example of description of Oppenheimer. It felt like it just lurched from scene to scene to scene to scene. And my way of describing it is, I feel like the first cut of Oppenheimer was 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And they said, well, what can we cut out? Here's a pause. Cut that pause out. Here's another pause. Cut that out. And they got it down to 3 hours. That's what it felt like to me. So when it won Best Editing, I was like, really? It was,
yeah.
I felt like it was kind of edited with a machete.
And some scenes don't connect well together.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with you on the editing, but the actual visuals of that movie are what did it for me.
Cinematography is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Oppenheimer for you, Andrew?
For Best Picture? Out of this list, yes.
Yeah.
And then number two would have been Poor Things out of this list.
Oh, I was wondering about that. I know you really loved Poor Things.
Yeah. I saw, of course, Oppenheimer opening night in the theater, and then I watched it when it came out on Max with my dad. It's not the same experience as seeing it in the theater.
I know.
In a packed theater on IMAX. So,
yeah.
That movie, I think, is meant to be seen on a big screen, but with a lot of patience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer was six for me.
Six? Oh, wow. What was number one for you?
Number one, it's 1 and 1A. I enjoy, because, you know, Robert pointed this out, Past Lives.
Oh, wonderful
movie. I enjoyed that movie. I didn't expect to. I sat down, like, I want to watch, it's going to be one of those indie art. And I was like, oh, this is a great story. Yeah. Very moving. I love the holdovers. I had loved American Fiction. And I love Killers of the Flower Moon. And I would have put Godzilla. I'm sorry to keep pounding this drum.
You know
Godzilla
what?
I'm going to
agree with you there. I liked Godzilla better than Oppenheimer. And I saw something today, I think, that said Godzilla was a great sequel to Oppenheimer, which
I read that too, yeah.
And then I would put, you know, Oppenheimer there.
Wow, fascinating. Yeah,
I'm glad you brought it up. You know what? Actually, I think Poor Things is right on its heels.
Oh, I like Poor Things more than
Oppenheimer's heels. But
yeah.
So Oppenheimer was six on my list.
Wow. And I liked Anatomy of a Fall more than Oppenheimer, too.
Wow. Interesting stuff.
I agree with you. Six on my list, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean.
Director. Nolan. I don't think there's any surprises there. Nolan, you know, Andrew, at the risk of you leaping over this table, I'm not a huge Nolan guy. I do think that The Dark Knight is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. But a lot of his movies, I think, are great visually, but I have a hard time following the story.
Yeah. Did you see Tenet?
But, no, I did not see Tenet.
Because that's his most
out there
convoluted.
Yeah. Yeah. Even more so than Interstellar, which...
Or Interstellar, yeah.
Interstellar, I was lost. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. And Inception... I enjoyed the movie, but I don't. It's like, okay, there's a lot of holes in this.
He's very mathematical and
cerebral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that, I think sometimes he does lose the audience, understandably. Like, so I understand that, and I accept that critique.
I like South Park called him out on it. Just because the movie's complicated doesn't mean it's good.
But I've heard the opposite, too, where people have said, you don't necessarily need to know what's going on to have a good time. So I believe in that, too.
Yeah.
So I will say it's deserved. Christopher Nolan was due.
Yes.
And I have no problem with him taking home the award. Do you guys agree or disagree with that?
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a problem with Nolan. He was due. He was going to get it.
Yeah. I'm going to say this. I wanted Scorsese to win.
Yeah.
I think he's a far greater director. I like Killers more. But, yes, Nolan and... has accomplished a lot, too. Dating back to Memento. I'm a huge champion of Memento, by the way.
Yeah.
That's my favorite film he's ever done. The Dark Knight, I still consider the finest superhero movie of all time.
I agree.
Absolutely. I would say Oppenheimer's probably my third favorite Nolan. Third or just after Batman or The Dark Knight and Memento.
I mean, and he had the momentum. The only one where the momentum didn't work was for Lily Gladstone. That was when I was sitting there going, okay, and the winner is Emma.
Yeah. I hate to use this term, but I thought politics were going to play a role in securing the Oscar for Lily Gladstone, because all anyone talked about on the red carpet was what a big moment this was for Indigenous people, and this will mean so much for Indigenous people. And then
I'm wondering if that actually ended up hurting Lily.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic performance.
It was. And Emma Stone's brilliant in Poor Things. I said before the awards, whoever wins out of those two women, it's not going to bother me. They're right. Both extraordinary. So,
and you know, this is, she's early in her career. She's going to be in that crowd again. She's going to be in seated in that auditorium.
Now, is she this generation's Meryl Streep? Is we'll she in see. Line for that?
Lily Gladstone?
Oh, no.
Or are you talking about Emma Stone? Oh,
yeah. I was talking about Lily Gladstone. Oh, okay. But, yeah, but Emma Stone, she's two wins under her belt already.
Right.
She's
four nominees already, right?
Hollywood royalty.
Oh, she's 50%?
Officially. Is she two for four? I don't know what her total is.
Yeah, she's nominated for La La Land, Birdman, The Favorite, and now this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she's Hollywood's darling
she's
right
50%,
now.
She's 50%, yeah. She could do it.
She's probably, 34 or 35? If she's already got four noms. That's
right. And if someone were to ask me, who's your current favorite Hollywood actress? Emma Stone's at the top of the list.
You gotta see Poor Things.
She's so great.
She's so great
in it. You gotta get weird just one night.
You wanna get nuts? Yes. Let's get nuts.
Maybe going with a little bit of rum. Yeah. Never know.
We'll see. I'm so afraid to go through a Babylon experience where I got 10 minutes into it and turned it off and turned my stomach. But
I don't know if that would be the same comparison. Yeah. I haven't seen Babylon, but from what I've heard of it.
I did, and I think Poor Things is in better taste.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Best Actor, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer. I really think it's a no-brainer. Robert, I know you said Giamatti was right up there.
Look, I'm a Giamatti guy. But once he won the BAFTA and then that SAG, it was game over.
Yeah.
But what a list, though.
Yeah.
And
Giamatti showed so much grace up there, so much humility.
Yeah.
He walked Divine Joy Randolph up to the stage, and he was moved. He was crying in her award speech. Yep. Well, just a stand-up guy.
Giamatti. And the interaction.
And that led to one
Nick
of the
Cage.
Other moments. We've got Nick Cage. I would have worn the glass eye.
That was hilarious. That was one of the best moments.
Yeah, that was awesome. Would I have done that? Hell yes. But he did it. Yeah, that was awesome. So, in my mind, Murphy was just a no-brainer. That was one of the odds-on favorites. Supporting actor, obviously Robert Downey Jr., again, well-deserved, an incredible story, incredible arc for the actor to go from where he came from to where he ended up. And, you know, was Iron Man the turning point in his career that, you know, made him popular with mainstream audiences, I guess. But you just can't help but root for the guy and offer him congratulations. So, I think that was a no-brainer well-deserved. Best Actress, Emma Stone. She was genuinely shocked when they called her name. You could see it on her face. I think she went up there totally unprepared for what she was going to say. Everyone thought it was going to be Lily Gladstone, and Emma Stone secures her second win. So pretty impressive. And that win alone was like, okay, I'm going to have to watch the movie eventually, but I'll watch it through my fingers.
Lily Gladstone. Losing was Robert and I at the blackjack table. I got two 20s. It's 21. And I went, come on.
We're going to Vegas.
Yeah, what were the odds?
Supporting actress, again, I don't think there was a lot of upset here. Divine Joy Randolph, her win, her speech, everything was so perfect, well-deserved. And, that was one of the better moments of the broadcast. What else? What other ones you guys want to talk about? Let's jump to cinematography. Oppenheimer won for cinematography. Looking at the competition, you know, just the whole story behind the practical effects when it came to detonating the bomb. Even before I saw the film, I'm like, yeah, it's probably going to win for cinematography.
Even the absurdity. Could we get a nuke? No, Chris.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't know how they do it in England.
Can we launch a little one? Yeah. So, yeah, not much. There weren't a lot of surprises during this broadcast. Everything sort of fell in line.
You know who should have been in cinematography. You know the theme. You know who I'm going to say. Godzilla.
Yeah. I it could have been in that.
Could at least got a nomination. Wouldn't have won.
Yeah. Well, it was nominated Poor Things, I'm sure.
Yeah.
For cinematography.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Maestro.
I had never heard of Al Conde.
Al Conde is a Netflix film. It's very well shot. It's a vampire movie.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Augusto Pinochet is actually the vampire.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you never you.
The Chilean dictator is a vampire.
I like this already.
We talked about editing, Zone of Interest won for Best International Feature Film.
I saw all five of those international films. I think Zone of Interest was the strongest of the five.
Yeah. You know what the Academy tends to do with the Best International Film is there have been times where people, an international film will be among the nominees for Best Picture. And what the Academy always seems to do is, well, we'll give the international film that award, and then we'll give the Best Picture to one of our own. That happened with Life is Beautiful and films like that.
Oh, yeah.
Music. Let's talk music. Original score went to Oppenheimer. That was interesting.
Yep.
I don't remember much about the original score.
I mean,
it's free.
He was nominated again.
Yeah.
You know he was nominated.
John Williams.
John.
Yeah.
John
for Indiana Jones, Dial Destiny.
Is that his first loss? I don't know. But, yeah, imagine saying you beat John Williams for an Oscar. That's something to brag about. We talked about Best Song, What Was I Made For? I love the song. A buddy of mine commented that he thought it was kind of dull, and I'm like, no.
It's a very moving song, I think.
Beautiful song. Yeah. Production design, again, I thought it should have gone to Barbie, but it went to Poor Things. You guys agree with that, Best Production Design?
Yeah. Poor Things for me, too.
But, Barbie would have been second.
Yeah, Barbie would be my second.
I didn't see Napoleon or Killers, but
those got great.
But
Napoleon was impressive. But I'm like, you can go to France. Most of that stuff is still there. Like you didn't really have to. You could go to Versailles and like most of these palaces, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, and I just watched Barbie again the other day after watching the Oscars, and I liked it better the second time around. I saw the first time I saw it in a theater. Watch it on DVD after the Oscars, and it holds up upon repeated viewing.
It's a very amusing film. I think it's going to have like a Grease type of legacy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, where I think young people today, as they get older and have children, they're going to say, let's sit down and watch Barbie.
That's an excellent comment. It could be this generation's Grease.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and what's interesting, and I don't know, maybe I caught more of it upon my second viewing, but there is some, like Grease, there's some adult humor in there. Like when they arrive at Venice Beach, and she's like, neither one of us have genitalia.
Right.
And Ken's like, I have all the genitalia. So, yeah, it does have that adult humor in it. But
nobody's going to beat anybody off.
I will beat you off. Yeah, it has those moments. And you're right. I think that movie's going to have legs. I think it's a movie that today's generation is going to share with their offspring down the road. Let's jump to adapted. We talked about Godzilla winning visual effects. Adapted screenplay went to American Fiction. I can't wait for that to be released on DVD. That's the movie I haven't seen yet that I really
Barbie didn't win that. Like Barbie was, everybody thought Barbie was going to win original screenplay, and they're like, no, it's adapted material. Then it lost all that momentum, and American Fiction won it.
Yeah, because it was based on a doll. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I'm really looking forward to seeing American Fiction. Original screenplay went to Anatomy of a Fall.
I wish the Holdovers won that.
Yeah, you're right. Like I said, I think the strike against the Holdovers, I talked about this on the last podcast, is that it was just felt familiar. We've seen, you know, films have trotted that ground before, and it just felt familiar.
I think that's the reason why I didn't win the original, just because we've been down that road before. I do think it does it better than many of the roads we've done before, but it is familiar. You can't deny that.
Yeah. Now, Andrew, you had said that there were some movies you felt were left out of the conversation.
Well, I was just saying there might have been some, and I was just going to ask if anybody. I know Robert mentioned earlier today we were texting that, you know, what might have been some movies that we really liked that we felt didn't get any noms at all, and for me, and it's just I know. You're going to roll your eyes, Joe, but that movie last year, Bo is Afraid, is such an original movie. Maybe I could have seen a nomination for original screenplay. I don't know.
Or like Best Actor, too. I think Joaquin Phoenix was great in that.
Okay. Yeah.
But that movie's very out there for the Academy.
Yeah, it is. But I just would have liked to see that movie just get some sort of more recognition that it got just for being so original and out there, and I'd never seen anything like it before. Yeah. But
I think that movie's going to have legs, too. I think that film's going to grow a cult following and the weird cult people are going to gravitate towards it.
I will say this, and you guys are going to laugh. You might even think I'm not being serious here, but I'm dead serious. When I say that at least this movie should have been nominated for Best Cinematography, John Wick 4. I really enjoyed John Wick 4. I thought what they did with their camera movements and choreography on the fight scenes. Yeah. I remember sitting in the theater going, wow, when the camera was like overhead and following John Wick from room to room, like a video game.
Going on top of that hotel.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was beautiful. And it's a shame that Hollywood just doesn't even consider action flicks like
that. The staircase
that
was a bit absurd.
He fell down. It was absurd.
He fell down to like an Empire State Building worth of flight. Like, John, that must be a bulletproof suit. Physics is physics, man. Stop your fall.
If you start on Fast and Furious, I will leap over this table so quick. No, John Wick, you sort of expect certain things, and that was very John Wick.
But fight choreography, I agree with you.
But I thought the lighting, the cinematography was worthy of some recognition.
Great compositions, too.
Yeah, yes. I agree. And each like major fight scene felt like a distinct set piece that all linked together or whatever. So, you know, that's one of the complaints I have about the Academy is they get a little snobbish when it comes to films. Comedies are often overlooked, which really irks me.
That's why Tropic Thunder that one year, when it got nominated, I said, wait, what?
Yeah. Or when Marissa Tomei won for My Cousin Vinny, everyone thought that Jack Palance had read the wrong name because they're like, how dare a comedic performance win an Oscar? And I still see people today say, that performance was brilliant and well-deserved. But at the time, people were like, no, he made a mistake. He's a doddering old man. And the Academy tends to ignore comedies and big
action
pieces. And horrors is rarely acknowledged, rarely nominated. So I wish it wasn't
so
stodgy.
Did no one in Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, get nominated for anything?
I think maybe
like costume, maybe cinematography, but nothing too big.
None of the big seven. Okay.
But, so, you know, they expanded membership a few years ago to try and include more DEI. That's a phrase I just learned recently. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. And maybe that's going to have an impact where more movies of wider genres are going to be recognized. But I think this most recent Academy Awards ceremony just continued the trend of nominating a lot of movies that people hadn't seen, and the average American is like, I don't know what these are. That happens a lot. You know, like I said, they get their screening in L.A. and New York, and not a lot of people get a chance to see these movies.
Yep.
Give us a chance to see them.
Yep.
Speaking of Coppola, that's what I wanted to bring up. The one movie that I thought was completely snubbed was Sofia Coppola, as you guys brought her up in Lost in Translation. She has a new movie out, Priscilla, and for whatever reason.
Yes,
Priscilla. And that movie did so well, and it did well in the box office. I think a lot of it had to do with coming a year after Elvis. People might have been maybe Elvis'd out on the Oscar committee.
Right.
Plus, it didn't get the blessing of Graceland, because it doesn't put Elvis in the best of light either.
Yeah.
So well, it had something to do with it politically.
But it's also because it's from Priscilla's perspective.
But that movie, if you watch that film, it's on HBO Max now. I've watched a few times. It's so beautifully shot. It's so greatly acted. It's very moving, very empathetic movie, which you'd expect that type of humanism. You've seen other Sofia Coppola's films before, but I just thought it was like a best adapted screenplay, which is based on Priscilla Presley's book. You couldn't even nominate it for adapted. That was odd.
The
hair and makeup in that movie was stellar. Like, how could you not nominate it for that? And even the lead actress who plays Priscilla, Kaylee Spaney, is wonderful in that. I thought she should have been in the top five. She got a Golden Globe nomination, but that film, and they'd snub her a lot lately. I think it has a lot to do with her speaking out against Hollywood, like a lot of the stuff you've said before. She thinks Hollywood is very shallow. She says that she has a hard time getting funding, believe it or not. Her father, Francis, does too. They have to work. They work other jobs. Francis has his own winery. She has her own fashion line. They use that to fund their movies.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen, speaking of Sofia, have you ever seen her movie? I think it's called Somewhere.
I love that film. That one is not really for everybody, though, but I personally love the film. I like the arc in that film, the father kind of becoming a better
relationship. Yeah. I just saw it for the first time maybe last year.
Oh, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. It's a quiet movie. Yeah. It's not spectacle.
It's slow, if you want to call it that. Yeah, but it's so sublime. I'm glad you like that, Joe.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this question now. It's March 2024. We know we were talking about biopics. We know the Michael Jackson biopics could be made because Coleman Domingo's playing
right
the dad.
The dad.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Father. So are we talking about, is Coleman going to get a nomination for supporting? Oh. And is that film, whoever's playing the lead, are we going to see any nominations for that? For music?
Isn't that his?
Well, they
that
like his, biopics.
He's, isn't that Michael's nephew playing him?
I have no idea.
Are they related? I don't know.
I thought it was.
I tell you one thing, that the actor playing the father is going to have plenty of opportunities to chew the scenery because he was a character. So. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that, you know, maybe that's a topic for another podcast is predictions for next year's Oscars. We'll have to come back to
Marley's for next year, right? Bob Marley's one that came out.
I don't think that's got a chance, though, because they got creamed. It did well at the box office, but didn't do well critically.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know. I think right now, seeing the release list, I think the front runner is Deadpool versus Wolverine, which will bring to a conclusion, like Lord of the Rings, one of the greatest trilogies of all time.
We joke Deadpool now. Trilogy. Watch what happens.
We got Gladiator 2 coming out in November.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. All right. So we'll revisit this topic a little bit later on. But we're just about out of time. Really enjoyed this discussion, guys. I'm just such a huge a fan of the Oscars, the history. I just like to see what's going to unfold. I love coming in on Monday to work and saying, did you watch? Did you watch? And picking over all the moments and stuff. It's just something I enjoy doing. And I sure would love to be in the grandstands one day watching the celebrities come and go. I have a friend that's done that twice now.
Lucky.
But, yeah, that would be fun to witness
now,
that spectacle.
Here's one thing I'm asking you. We're 1 year in advance. If ON TV allows it, could we open the studio up on a Sunday and live broadcast with the green screen the Oscars in the studio?
There'd be some legal wrangling that might have to take
We have part. 1 year to ask.
The cameras would have to be pointed at us the entire time.
Yes, but, absolutely.
Watch it on your second monitor on your computer. We could watch with you. I'll bring the candy and the popcorn. All right. Thanks, guys. Great discussion. And thanks to everyone who listened. And as usual, we're going to end with our little ditty. And we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Come to the movies. Watch Charlie Chaplin. And put some sunshine into your day. Forget the hard times, come to the movies, and try to laugh your troubles away.